Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing this week? I hope you are well. We are hot and muggy, but that should surprise no one. Things are going pretty well this week. I've been having a good time with the writing blog that I'm doing, the yearofstories.wordpress.com. I think I mentioned last time, or maybe the time before, maybe and the time before, the idea is to write a little bit of short fiction every day, and that's what I'm doing. So far, so good. I've not missed a day. Not all of them are good. Some of them I kind of like. There was one fun one I like called The Day the Gays Came, which celebrated the legalization of same-sex marriage in the state of New York. So good for you, New York. You should be very proud of yourselves. But I'm just having a good time writing again. It's been a while since I've really put a concerted effort into that, and it's fun. I see why people like it. And I realized something this evening while I was working on tonight's writing is that one of the most fun moments, and I imagine for any writer, is when you realize something about a character that the character has not yet realized about him or herself. That's a fun moment, because you sit there and you wait. You're like, ooh, I can't wait till I get to reveal this to you. It's so cool. That's fun, and I am enjoying that. And like I said, it's yearofstories.wordpress.com. There's a link on the LabLib blog, of course, so if you want to check it out, let me know. If you think I suck, you can keep it to yourself, but maybe add some constructive criticism. You know, start everything with bless your heart, but. And that works. That's good. That's good Southern criticism. So anyway, that's off topic. That's not what we're talking about today. It is, of course, the last Thursday in the month. So we are doing the next of the watch books. This is the Day Watch, book two. And my trivia question for you last week was, what is one way of becoming a vampire in Russia, traditionally? I did a little bit of quick Googling and research on this one. Turns out, and I didn't get any correct answers, by the way. I'm very disappointed. But it turns out that one way, a pretty good way to become a vampire in Russia, traditionally, is heresy. Yeah, you live a heretical life, you come back as one of the undead, which means that I'm pretty much on a path to undeadness. I believe that my Facebook profile lists my religion as heretic. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be good. That'll be good. Anyway, I'll try to come up with maybe an easier one for the next one, but here we are. We're on to Day Watch. This is book two of the Watch series by Sergei Lukyanenko. And first, this message. The distribution of this review has been banned as injurious to the cause of the light. From the Night Watch. The distribution of this review has been banned as injurious to the cause of the dark. From the Day Watch. Okay, got all that out of the way. One thing you got to say about the watches, they're incredibly bureaucratic. You don't dot every T and cross every I, and they're all over you. Anyway, the previous book left us with kind of an unbalanced Moscow. Can't imagine what that looks like. The forces of light gained a powerful ally in the form of Svetlana Nazarova, a potential great sorceress. Now, even before she knew she was an other, one of those mysterious class of beings who can work magic, who can make curses and bless and change their shapes, she was able to create a curse that nearly destroyed Moscow. She and the city were saved through the bravery of Anton Gorodetsky and the Night Watch, who guard against the excesses of the forces of darkness, and in the end, the light prevailed. But this battle between light and dark is far from over. As with the Night Watch and all the other Watch books, this volume contains three books, three stories. In the first, there's a young witch named Alisa Donikova, and she has overreached herself, let's say. In a fight with the Night Watch, Alisa poured every last drop of her magical energy into supporting her fellow Day Watch members, an act of selflessness that nearly cost her her life. Burned out, she is directed to take a break at a children's summer camp in Crimea. Posing as a camp counselor, she would be in a prime position to feed off the nightmares of impressionable young girls. Now, a word for a moment. We'll take a little sidetrack. A word about the others and their powers. The foundation of an other's power comes from humans. While any other has her own reserves to call on, she may, let's say, feed on normal people around her. The light others take happiness and joy, literally. I mean, have you ever been feeling really, really good, and then somehow the feeling just sort of drains away? Well, that's what the light others do, and it powers them to no end. Much like a flowering shrub, though, pruning someone's happiness doesn't make it go away forever, and it may even come back greater, but Still, in order to become stronger, the light others have to weaken people. Now, those on the side of the dark feed off of things like fear and anger, but when they do, that fear and anger remain. It's like warming yourself by the fire. As long as you keep feeding it, it'll keep you warm. A dark other at the height of his power could probably supercharge himself just by going into a snowed-in airport for a few days. Believe me, I know. This stew of rage and frustration, though, it's all a little bit too much for Alisa. She must subsist on the thin broth that is children's nightmares. While she's there, however, her plan hits a snag in the form of a handsome, solid, beautiful man named Igor. Despite herself, she falls in love with him, and boy, does she fall hard. The fact that he's a light other doesn't come up until much too late. The second story brings a mysterious figure to Moscow. Vitali Rogoza has no memory of who he is or where he came from. All he knows is that he has to go to Moscow, and that he has power, the power of a dark other. Despite his personal amnesia, he has no trouble ingratiating himself with the Moscow day watch and soon discovers that his power appears to have no upper limits. Why this should be? No one knows. Is he some dark magician beyond classification? Or is he something else entirely, something new and terrible? Whatever he is, what is his goal? And what is his link to the theft of Fafnir's Talon, a dark artifact of unspeakable power? And the third story, of course, brings it all together. The sad fate of Alisa Denikova, the theft of the Talon, the rise and fall of the great sorceress Svetlana Nazarova. And what's more, the greater plans of the light and the dark are laid bare and are changed forever. As before, the book is heavily laden with the philosophy of good versus evil, light versus dark. More importantly, it addresses issues of freedom, which is a central tenet to the forces of darkness. How free, they ask, can we really be? Now, the light wants to make humanity better. They believe that given the right influences and the right incentives, humanity can be great. But they need to be guided, molded, and shaped. So consequently, the light occasionally embarks on grand world-changing plans, few of which actually work out the way they intend. The dark, on the other hand, worships freedom. Every person, they say, should be free to choose his or her own path. Now, if the path means doing good, then so be it. If it means doing evil, well, hey, that's cool too. The point is that every person is capable of deciding how their lives should be led, and no one, human or other, should be able to take that freedom away from them. It's really one of the oldest questions there is. How much freedom do we really deserve? How much freedom do we really need? And it's a question that can never be definitively answered. But in these books, anyway, it's a lot of fun to watch it play out. So let me give you a quote from the book. This comes from Alisa, who is a member of the Day Watch, and she says, "There are some who think that we dark ones are evil, but that's not true at all. We're simply just. Proud, independent, and just. And we decide things for ourselves." So there you go. That is The Day Watch, Book 2. And that whole topic of freedom versus control, we're talking about that in class right now because we're doing Ender's Game, right? And if you've read Ender's Game, you know that one of the great themes of that book is freedom versus control. You know, how much control over his life does Ender really have? How much freedom does he really have? Valentine and Peter, how much freedom do they have? It's a hard, hard question. How much freedom do you have? How much freedom do you really need? And as much as we love and cherish freedom, especially those of us merkins, how much freedom can we really use? Honestly, I mean, some people, they get all their freedom and they go nuts. Other people, they're good with it. So it's a very, very hard question. It's one of those questions that will keep politicians and lawyers in business forever. God help us all. Anyway, that is the Day Watch, and I hope you enjoyed that. I also hope you had a chance to listen to Lost in the Stacks this weekend. I enjoyed putting this one together. It was about the power that fictional characters have over our real lives and our real sort of moral development. For me, fictional characters are amazingly important, as it turns out. So take a listen and tell me what you think. You know, add your ideas in the comments. I'd love to hear them. Now, next week's book. As long as we're talking about freedom, there is one interesting aspect of freedom, and that is the freedom to destroy yourself. No, all right, that didn't sound right. The freedom to do things that could end up in your destruction, all right? This could be things like racing stock cars or base jumping or voting Republican, any sort of thing like that. The freedom to destroy yourself. The book we're going to talk about next week, it's a nonfiction book, and it's about, well, really two things. One is a specific group of people who are doing a very good job at almost destroying themselves, mainly based in Hawaii and California. And these people, well, they're out there looking for the ultimate thrill in the ocean. Let's just say that. The other part of the book is kind of looking at some unique ways that we do not understand how our world works. All right, I hope those clues made sense. I don't know if they did. If they didn't make sense, well, you know, I'm sorry. I've got three other things going on in my head at the same time. But that's what it is. It's partly about a group of people who are on the ocean looking for the ultimate thrill and nearly dying for it. The other part is talking about how we do not understand how our oceans work. That is your clue, or those are your clues. Tell me what next week's book is, and you win, I don't know, you win a 1 degree temperature increase in your ocean. Enjoy that. That has been it for this week. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope that you go on and do whatever it is you plan to do today with great vigor and enthusiasm. So I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.